Okay. Our last day. Man. I don't think we have any logistical announcements. I think we're pretty much set. We're going to try to just the announcement that we're going to have 1 hour for lunch. That way, if we want to leave early, we can. So we do it for 1 hour and then we don't have to push everything to the afternoon. Good. How you feeling? Feeling good? Still inspired? Yeah, you gotta talk about the last part. You gotta talk about this last part. So I want to talk about two things today. One is how important it is as to where you put your attention. To begin to pay more attention to where you put your attention than what you're doing or how's it working out. And I've been vacillating this morning about whether to talk about spiritual seclusion first or whether I should talk about attention first. I really can't. We'll just see what shows up because I can't. Both of them are so important. So I was saying that I was vacillating between whether to talk about attention, where you put your attention, because that is ultimately the main point of Dhamma. I mean, there's a lot of main points like letting go of clinging and recognizing dukkha. But all of those things come from where you put your attention. And as a Buddhist said, that it was where you put your attention. That's the main thing. And so I was trying to decide all morning whether to do where you put your attention or do this spiritual seclusion. And actually, I've convinced myself that we're going to talk about where you put your attention first. We'll talk about spiritual seclusion in the afternoon. Because a lot of our spiritual seclusion, this obsession we have with our stuff, is because this obsession is because of where we put our attention. And so I think we should talk about where we put our attention first this morning. And it also helps us with samadhi so that you have more samadhi for the afternoon. That's really what you need. All right, so let me just rearrange my notes here a little bit. This is the way the Buddha described it. He said, monks, practitioners, there are two conditions for the arising of wrong view. Now, just think a moment. Wrong view does not mean you're on the wrong political side. Wrong view does not mean that you're not right. That's not what. View, wrong, right, right view, wrong view, that's not what it is. So the whole of the Dhamma is the Eightfold Path. I mean, even though the Buddha saw impermanence, which is what he saw when he awakened, he saw conditionality and began to realize that everything was conditional. And if he learned to see those conditions, you could free yourself. Anyone could. If you learn to see the conditions that are pushing you could free yourself. But the path that leads to that seeing is the Eightfold Path. So without the Eightfold Path, you might see things, but you won't get it. We all see impermanence. We all know everything is impermanent. It's not like earth-shaking. Even like I was saying yesterday, mindfulness, it's not earth-shaking. We're all mindful. We all have concentration. A burglar has concentration when he's trying to steal your stuff out of your house. He's very aware of every little sound that's happening, he or she. Because, yes, I do know some women that steal or burglarize. But it is not in the pursuit of a free mind. It's in the pursuit of getting something, right? But it's not this pursuing, liberating the mind. So if you're going to, if we're talking about liberating the mind, then you need a particular type of view. Then it's a little bit different. So this right view, what we're going to talk about in the path when we talk about spiritual viveka, but this right and wrong that you're going to hear repeatedly, or that you hear repeatedly in the Eightfold Path, it is how harmonious are you with the understanding of liberation? So how harmonious can you understand liberation? And we kind of take it for granted because we live in a world where liberation is, we live in the world of Dhamma. We live with wisdom of Buddha Dhamma. But not every generation of people live with the wisdom of Buddha Dhamma. We don't really, I mean, unless you get into Dhamma like I do, I'm pretty nerdy. I've been in it for a long time, very obsessive. My kids say when they come into my house, it feels like they can't even swear. It's like, wait, what kind of place have I entered here? I can't help it. It's just the way I have been for years. I just am steeped in it. But part of that steeped in it kind of energy is I have read so much about worlds when there was no Buddha Dhamma. And it is a very different world. It doesn't seem like it to us because we have access to it. But you can feel we are in what's called a Buddha ending era. That's what Kittasaro says. We're in a Buddha ending era. I didn't bring the sutta, but the Buddha said what would happen at the end of the time, and it does sound pretty familiar. But we're at a Buddha ending era, meaning that that the wisdom of the Four Noble Truths will at some point end. And human beings will not be able to access that information until another Buddha is born. Can you get that? You may not even believe that, right? But it's very serious. So what that means is we take it for granted, but when the Buddha first, when Siddhartha, let's say the man Siddhartha, when he was born, there was no Buddha in the world. So what that would mean is people could find ways to deal with difficulties. They could find ways to manage their difficulties, find ways to, live with it. We all have difficulties, not like whether there's a Buddha's wisdom in the world or not, we all are still going to have difficulties because that comes with being human. And so people knew how to manage it. In fact, when the Buddha left, he went to renowned teachers of his day who could teach deep samadhi. Deep, deep, deep samadhi. And you could feel the bliss of that. So you could devote your life to just staying connected into meditation, and you could reach these blissful states and be sure that you've liberated. But you're not, because at some point somebody's going to irritate you. So you got to get more and more and more by yourself. But even sitting on your stone block too long is going to make the butt hurt, and that's going to be irritating. So it's not like you're going to get away from it. So when the Buddha got there, he realized something's wrong. I can't get away from this suffering. And he asked his teachers, do you know any more? And they're like, no, we've taught you the extent of what we know. And he's like, that cannot be it. I'm still having difficulties. So what he actually realized is that it's not the difficulty. That's always happening. It's our inability to relate to that difficulty, or how we are relating to the difficulty is where our suffering is coming from. It's not coming from the difficulty. I gotta say that again. It's not because you have pain in the body. Pain in the body, whether we want to accept it or not, every single person of us, we're going to all go through pain. And some bodies may not have no pain right now, but I assure you, you will. Speaking from age, you are going to be beginning to face some pain. It's just part of the body. It doesn't have anything to do with us. But if we personalize it and then push against it, wishing it wasn't there, we're going to suffer. You think you suffer because of the pain, but you don't. You suffer because of the mind's inability to accept this is the way it is, or because it doesn't know what to do and it wants to stop that pain or whatever. But we're all going to lose people that are very close to us that we don't want to lose. We're going to lose them. We're all going to go through bouts of financial instability, housing instability. We're all going to go through all of these difficulties, because that is the nature of being human. That is not. The Buddha was never coming to help us liberate from that. And so that is, without the wisdom of a Buddha, that's what we look to. How do I fix my life so I don't have so much struggle? And then when the Buddha saw the path, what he saw was it was my clinging to something other than what was real. That's where his difficulties were. And he, with meditation, persistence, he let go of it. We can see that if you let go a little bit, just one day, yesterday, you let go just a little of things, it's so freeing. And yet, letting go completely takes a lot of persistence. And so that's what your practice is. The Eightfold Path is designed to stir up all your problems. Stir it up, bring it face to face. You didn't think that, did you? You know, it's sort of like the Eightfold Path is what I'm going to practice so I can get still. But in order to get still, you got to have all your problems stirred up all the time. So it keeps stirring up all your stuff that you don't like. But those are the things that are causing you to keep from being still. So that's what he saw. That's the wisdom of a Buddha, is the Eightfold Path, the path that leads to the ending of suffering. And everything else is just inspiration to keep you on that path. So I want to talk about attention, because staying on the path when you have all this stuff coming up? Because I should say this, you know, Trungpa Rinpoche's, you know, for all his difficulties and mess, somebody asked him one time, you know, you've been in the Dhamma for a long time. Is it worth it? I mean, you've been practicing for a long time. Is it worth it? And he looked at them and he says, if the Dhamma does not have you right now, if it hasn't gotten you, get out while you can. Just get out right now. If it hasn't got a hold of you, run to the door. Get out. Because once it gets a hold of you, there's no kind of like being off the path. I know people think I haven't been on the path. They're like, I haven't been practicing. I used to practice all the time. Now I don't. Like I'm on and then I'm off. And then I'm on and then I'm off. Mm-mm. It doesn't work like that. Once you're on, you're always on. You might be extending the time, but you're always on. You don't go on, get off, on, off, on, off. It's not like that. Think of it more as walking fast, walking slow. Walking fast, walking slow. So you're just walking slower. Or you've sat on a bench along the way and you're sitting on a bench. But eventually you're going to have to get up, start walking again. So you never get off the path. And sometimes things that we're doing seem like we're off the path, but actually we're on the path. We have to fix this part and then come back, and then fix this part and then come back. So we're always on the path. And the reason why that's important to know is because where you put your attention has a lot to do with how you move along. The term is called yoni so manasikara. That's what it is. So it's yoni so manasikara. So the yoni so is what I'm going to talk about first. Manasikara is something different. But the Buddha said that there's no other condition. These two things, this is what he said. There are these two conditions for the arising of wrong view. That's where I veered off a moment. But okay, wrong view. The voice of another and inappropriate attention. So if somebody tells you something and you're not attending to it, or you just follow what they say, that can point you towards wrong view. Or you could hear the wisdom of the Dhamma, but you're not attending to it. And again, that can lead you into wrong view. But these two conditions are for the arising of right view, the voice of another, and appropriate condition, appropriate attention. So when you have the hearing of the Buddha's wisdom, so it's not me, it's not how I say it. Maybe the way I say it lends to your attention. So it's for some teachers, for some people, the way I say it is distracting, so they can't listen to it. But for some people, the way I say it lends to your attention. And then that attention is what is causing your wisdom. Not me, what I say, but the attention that you're giving to whatever that Dhamma is that you hear. They think it is, the commentaries say, this voice of another is hearing teachings. That's what it's about. So this, you're hearing the Buddha Dhamma. This is another reason why it's important that we're born in this time. Because even though we're in a Buddha ending era where there's going to come a time when generations will not know that there is a path to uproot themselves from suffering, we are born in a time where that wisdom is there. And so you can hear it. And then everybody in this room no matter how difficult life is, has this possibility to cultivate a liberating kind of quality to it. So Yoni So Manasikara, what Thanissaro Bhikkhu, who's one of the people that have translated all these Dhamma talks and suttas into English, he calls it appropriate attention. That's what I like, appropriate attention. But Bhikkhu Sujato, who's another translator, he calls it proper attention. And then Bhikkhu Bodhi, who is probably along the lines of Thanissaro Bhikkhu, he calls it wise attention. So any one of those words, any one of those ways of thinking about it, appropriate attention, the proper attention, or wise attention, this is what we're talking about. This is what's important in when you're going to look at your life spiritually in relation to Dhamma. So yoniso means a womb. It's like the origin. I like Venerable Analio, who lives in the States here, and he is he doesn't translate everything. What he does is interpret and explain what everything means. But he defines this yoniso manasikara as doing something thoroughly and penetratively, in the sense of getting down to the origins, penetrating the outer surface of something and understanding the true essence of it. Understanding the true essence of it is underneath the surface. So you're getting below. That's what you were all doing, those of you that spoke yesterday. That's what you were doing. You had some momentary experience that you could just write off, just something that you saw. You don't have to say anything about it at all. But what you were talking about is, I saw something else with this otherwise random thing. Not really a big deal, but I saw something. So what you were actually sharing was more profound than the thing that caused that profundity to happen. Can you see that? Some of the most simplest, basic things that happen to us become these fundamental openings because you are seeing more, you're penetrating thoroughly into the origin of this. This is what the Dhamma does. It's not that it's telling you some philosophical understanding that you agree or don't agree. It's not that. It is cultivating an ability for you to see and understand something fully, thoroughly, penetrate it. Tiny things, standing at the dishwasher, little bitty, you know, sitting at a stoplight. And you can have these profound moments of understanding. That's what happened on my retreat. I had this profound moment into understanding seclusion because I was available to the Dhamma and I wasn't just in my habit mind. But the manasikara is, this is about attention. It's a kind of attention that we think of as mindfulness. But mindfulness has more of a remembering quality. And manasikara is pointing to a kind of direct attention. So if you think back to the comments people made yesterday, they would take some simple thing, some direct, I'm thinking about Sean, pain in my ear. Very simple, pain in my ear. That's what I feel, pain in my ear. And then I had this whole kind of like, well, there's the mind that's saying there's pain in the ear, and then there's a body, and somehow I get another little thing, and it's saying, it's okay, nothing, we're calm, everything's good. You have It's like there's this huge range of what can be known on something that we would otherwise just dismiss. Just, oh, I got pain in my ear. This is what the Buddha, this is why the cultivation of Buddha Dhamma is so important. Because what we see on the surface level is insignificant almost to what's really going on underneath. And you don't have to figure it out. It arises simply from the practice itself. That's what Yoni Somana Sakara is standing for. It's a natural aspect of mind. So the main consideration is the object of the mind, what the mind is directed towards. So whatever it's directed towards, it will expound upon that. According to Thanissaro Bhikkhu, Buddha gave prime importance to the ability to frame issues of suffering in this proper way. Right? So he called that ability Yoni Samana. Yoni So, it's Yoni So Manasakara. I love that word, that phrase, Yoni So Manasakara. I never talk like that. That's why it's hard for me to say it, but I love hearing it. It just seems so, I don't know, significant, I guess. And he said that no other inner quality was more helpful for untangling suffering and gaining release. I can't remember, I think it was you, Matthew, maybe, that said you were struggling with this kind of getting lost and figuring things out versus, you know, what do? You just let it be? Do you try to figure it out? And this Yoni So Manasakara is, that's what the right attention is. So even if you try to figure something out and you get the sense, just the sense that, oh, I'm trying to figure this out. There's too much thinking going on. That is Yoni Samana Sakara. That recognition, that prompt to have you raise your hand and say, hey, wait a minute. Sometimes I'm lost in thought and I'm all caught up in the trying to figure it out. And how do I do that? That thought right there is Yoni Samana Sakara. That's what he's pointing to. Nalio says that it is instrumental in arousing the wisdom that leads to realization. So when you, it arouses this kind of, I don't understand, wait a minute, what's going on here? And our ordinary mind tend to immediately want to figure it out. But if you begin to know that there is a kind of wisdom that you're learning, then you're just be patient and receptive. The mere fact that the energy or the thought, the confusion has arisen in you, then that is significant. You want to sit with it a while and let it kind of marinate so you can grasp it for yourself. If some teacher tells you, then what generally happens, what we do, is we then decide whether we like that answer. Is that right or wrong? It's like, well, I don't know if I agree with that, because there's a wisdom in you already stirring. And some teacher, random kind of question, gives out this answer, and it may or may not land with what's really stirring in you, something deeper, more profound. That's why it's good to ask questions, but hold the answers really light, because they may or may not work. So mostly, because of its penetrative nature, it shines a light on clinging. That's what it does. That's what it's telling you. And you can feel it. But you want to somehow say that the way you're doing it is okay, right? So it's okay how I'm doing it, right? That's what we're really asking. Or how do I get rid of that? How do I fix that? Because I don't like that I'm doing this. So how do I fix that? But in order to cut through conditionality, we have to see the conditionality, right? You have to see what you're doing. And in order to see what you're doing, you have to be willing to stay with the uncomfortableness long enough for you to see below the surface. So we get uncomfortable and we try to fix it. Uncomfortable, try to fix it. And the idea that you would let suffering just be here so you can see, that doesn't make any sense to our ordinary understanding. That is weird. That, can you begin to see why the wisdom of a Buddha is very different? Because our normal training is when you see a problem, fix it. And the people that are successful, who are the good people, the best people, can solve those problems really quick. Quicker you are, better you are. It's the opposite with Dhamma. You want to let it stir a little bit. I cannot tell you how many times I sat with my very unskillful behavior. Very unskillful. Embarrassing unskillful. I don't even want you to know about it because you look at me and you're like, oh, Terry, they really like you. I know some people that will not speak to me to this day. So I've had to sit with wrong behavior, unskillful, harmful, mean behavior, and let it penetrate in the body so I could see the root of where it was coming from. We won't do that normally. We will try to fix it. I did something wrong. Let me quickly fix it so that I can get past that. And then we do it again. Again and again and again. Oh, let me fix it. Let me fix it. Again and again and again. The wisdom of a Buddha is the capacity to stay with it and give this appropriate, wise, proper attention to this suffering so we can see through it. And when you see it, it's like Santa Claus. Once you find out there's no Santa Claus, it's not like you can go back and kind of pretend like there is. It's why we go to great lengths not to let the kids find out that there's no Santa Claus. Because once they find out, that's it. It's done. And once you see it in reality, what is happening, it's like, yeah, that's it. But we have to see so much all the time. That's what we're practicing for, is to see over and over and over and over and over and over and over. So here's some ways that some of the masters have said how you can tell you're in wrong view. He goes, Ajahn Chah says, whenever we feel we are definitely right, so much so that we refuse to open up to anything or anybody else, right there, we are wrong. And it becomes wrong view. Yeah, but can you think that? I mean, just think about the politics. We are not opening up to any other views. We have our own view. But if we think we're definitely right, we're in wrong view. Ajahn Chah said that the Dhamma has to sink deeply into the mind so that whatever we do, the mind has always goodness within it. Right? Because you have to have goodness in order to hold something very painful. Like, and I did not know this, but part of my inability to stop my aggressive meanness was because I didn't have a soft, kind of loving heart. I was very tight. And I mean, it was rightly so. I came from trauma. So I'm tightening down because I'm trying to protect me and my crew. But I didn't realize that that tight heart was actually preventing me from seeing the truth of what was going on. The tighter your heart, the less you see. So when I started having this ability or wanting to stay with my difficulties, you can't stay with your difficulties with a tight heart, a hardened heart. You can't do it. You'll just stay in there beating yourself up about how terrible you are. That doesn't do any good. It's not like honorable that you're like up on the cross. I'm the terrible one. You don't believe it. You think you're right. And it's not like, even if I were on the cross, not like I thought I was wrong. I'm never wrong. So I wasn't listening to anything. So in order to penetrate, you have to have this soft, kind goodness from within. Not beating yourself up, but just be soft about it. It's painful, but soft about it. And then as you begin to see with this softer heart, you can see. You can see through it. You can actually see how painful some of these behaviors and habits we have are. Ajahn Chah is saying that Dhamma has to seek deeply into the mind so that whatever we do, the mind always has goodness in it. All the ways of making merit are aiming at this. Goodness lies in the right view that is established in the mind. Then we don't have to celebrate it or let anybody know about it. Simply let the mind have firm confidence in the goodness and keep going like this. That's it. So I begin to tell myself that no matter how painful my unskillful behavior was, if I let myself see it, if I was kind enough, gentle enough to let myself see it, that whatever I saw would lead to awakening. So I would just keep telling myself, okay, Tori, we really messed up. They probably won't be talking to you either. Put them on the list. That's okay. Let's just take a moment. And I've just sat through some very embarrassing moments. But the softer you get, the more you see, the more you understand, and it is leading to your liberation. It is not telling you how bad you are. If you're telling yourself how bad you are, you're not soft enough. You're not good enough. Because what you should be feeling is compassion. Because whatever harmful behavior you do, you are doing it out of pain. And so if you can't see that, then you're not actually having appropriate views. Not your appropriate attention on it. But one more thing here. This is what the Buddha said. Whatever a monk or a practitioner keeps pursuing what they're thinking and pondering, that becomes the inclination of their awareness. So if you're just holding something softly, gently, kindly, even though I'm holding, I mean, I just cussed my sister out and called her all kinds of names, and I'm very soft and gentle, kind. Okay, I can feel how angry I was. I can feel how painful it was. But I'm like, okay, soft and gentle. I begin to realize that that soft and gentle is actually the opposite of the feeling of aggression I actually have. And when you softly hold this kind of aggressive nature we have, you hold it softly, you can feel the pain of that aggression much quicker. If I hold it kind of tightly, I'm just as aggressive as it is, I never could feel it. But by holding it softly, being kind, I could begin to feel that aggression way before I ever said anything. I could feel it because it was just so harsh that I could begin to feel it. So that's what it is that we're trying to do. We're trying to put our attention on things that we don't want to put our attention on in order to help us begin to see the truth of how we're being against the backdrop of how we want to be. So the Eightfold Path is how you want to be, and what you're seeing is how you are. And that is always going to have this kind of painful hit. That's what you want to see, that painful hit. You're not trying to look out in the world and see how bad other people are. They got to work out their own karma. You're trying to see only you. So, and on one hand, it might seem like, wow, I'm just going to be sitting here talking about how jacked up I am all the time, and that's all I'm going to be looking at. I can't even look out there and talk about what they're jacked up to. You can't even do that. It seems like it would be an obsession with how bad you are. But that is not Buddha Dhamma. Buddha Dhamma is this soft, loving nature, even to you. Not loving everybody else, but loving soft, even to you. Understanding, compassionate, even to you. And as you begin to turn your attention towards you instead of anybody else, and you have this soft, kind way about it, it's very different. It's a very different world. I think that's all I wanted to say. Yeah. Here's what Pema Chodron, I'll leave us with Pema Chodron, because she is the queen of suffering. If I want to figure out how to be with this, I just look up Pema Chodron, because she knows. She done been through hell and back. So she says, people get into a heavy-duty sin and guilt trip, feeling that if things were going wrong, that means that they did something bad or they are being punished. And that's not the idea at all. The idea of wisdom is that you continually get the teachings that you need to open your heart. To the degree that you didn't understand in the past how to stop protecting your soft spot, how to stop armoring your heart, you're given this gift of teachings in the form of your life to give you everything you need to open further. So what we're going to talk about this afternoon is beginning to recognize that all the stuff that's showing up in your life is not accidental. It's there to help you actually open up and become more open-hearted. Not open-hearted towards the whole world, open-hearted towards you. That's where the open-heartedness needs to be. It's you become more open-hearted towards you. And when you start becoming more open-hearted towards you, then your relationship with the world begins to change. But first we need to have, if you're going to work on patience, let's say you're in heaven about to be born and God says, what do you want to work on, little girl? What do you want to work on, little bean? You say, I want to work on patience. Okay, I'm going to put you here. And all your life, you are going to have irritating things all around you. Why? Not because you're a bad person, but because you want to work on patience. So I want to work on kindness, and I just noticed how much meanness was all around me. Me and my whole world was all very mean, very angry. And I had to find kindness in the midst of that. Do you see what you're doing? So anything that's in your life, this is my opinion. I think you asked for it. So, you know, don't be grumbling about it. I know. I grew up in a trauma house. And so I guess I'm like, did I ask for this? Really? I don't think I asked for the trauma. I think I asked for learning how to be kind. But in order to learn how to be kind, you got to be around a whole bunch of unkind people so you can learn how not to be that. Do you see? So it's not like I asked for trauma, but if I'm going to learn how to be kind, I'm going to have to be around some unkind people. And we all kind of know that value that we really hold dear. And then if you look in your life, you're like, it's nowhere around me. That's because you got to cultivate it out of the mess that you were given. And this is what I think appropriate attention is about. Learning to see whether you're just following into the normal, you know, mess of life, or whether you're restraining and going against the grain. So that's what we're going to work on this morning. We're going to watch where our attention is. No judgment, no deciding, oh, this is a bad place to put my attention on. I keep thinking about going home. That's okay. I don't know if I want to stay. I keep thinking about that. That's okay. I don't want you to, you don't have to care what you're putting your attention on. You're opening a wisdom aspect of you that knows where you're putting your attention. And that wisdom aspect, once it begins to open up, it will naturally turn away from things that just are not useful and supportive. So you don't have to try to make your attention go this way. You just have to watch where it's going. Here, 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 here. It'll be like, here. That's what happens. It just has to see. And the wisdom itself will naturally move towards what's subtle and what's soft and what's good. All right? Gentle and kind. I know a lot of you think, no way my mind's going towards the gentle and kind. But it will. If it sees gentle and kind and it sees harshness, it will pick gentle and kind. All right, so let's take a break. Come back at the top of the hour, and we will start our hour and a half of practice. Thank you so much for your attention. I appreciate it.